There's some in-house matters. There's some in-house matters to address. Firstly, as committee members will know, today was not planned to be a sitting on a Steinhoff matter. And so the Public Service and Administration Committee pleaded with us on Monday that they have urgent business. As you know, Parliament rises next week for the third quarter end. And they said they'll come in at 11:30 or 12 at the latest. And there was little we could do. We spoke with the chair last night. Joan from Trade and Industry, Joan Fudge, explained that she's got a bill to process. Her committee will be here at 10:30 or thereabouts. Sorry? Yeah, she said they will send one or two reps from each of the parties to be here. But in the meanwhile, as the co-chair, maybe I should move a bit more to here. Yeah, as the co-chair, we should allow her, the co-chairs, we should allow, having the time to speak to the body. But very quickly, we're not going to cover the legal terrain. It's covered last week. Also, we had a meeting of party leaders in this cluster of four committees, and we explained the legal process, and it was handled, as you know, just to repeat for those of you who are here for the first time, by the Speaker's lawyers, Parliament's Legal Services Division, and the lawyers representing Mr. Houston. And you'll recall we issued a subpoena. Well, not we. Parliament did, based on the recommendation of the committees, handled on behalf of one committee, which the rules allow for. You would have read the court papers. A lot of it reflects a lack of understanding of Parliament's rules. So that was perfectly legitimate. Then there was discussion between the lawyers. Then there was a proposal from the Speaker's office that rather than spend endless hours in courts of law, since Mr. Houston agreed that he would attend anyway, but for the fact that the last week, Wednesday the 29th of August, was out for him, we should negotiate, not we, the lawyers. So they have done. We gave you the court papers last week. Advocate Jenkins explained the context. And in that regard, I'm required, in terms of the rules, to do the following. In terms of Section 16 of the Powers and Privileges Act, as set out in Rule 168, I read, and it's addressed to Mr. Houston. I understand you will take an oath. Right. So I read to you, please be informed that by law, you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry, notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages. You are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a House or committee, and it may not be used against you in any court or place outside Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. Do you acknowledge, Mr. Houston, that you understand the contents and implications of the oath? And if you have no objection to taking the oath, sir, do you consider the oath binding on your conscience? In that case, if I'm correct, Mr. Jenkins, I've covered everything, and so has Mr. Houston. All right. So basically, over then to you. Yes, you'll introduce yourselves. But welcome to all of you. Perhaps you should start by introducing yourselves. Sorry.
Chairman M.
Sorry, Chair.
Chair, we would just have to ask that. Do you swear that the evidence you're about to give is the truth?
Okay.
On that part, and he needs to respond to that.
Thanks, Chair.
Good. All right. So further down. Yes, indeed. Sorry about that. Do you swear that the evidence you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Say, so help me God, if you do. Is that done, Advocate Jenkins? Right. Now, before, you know, the procedure we'd agreed on between the lawyers, the last thing I want to say is that what would happen is it's left to Mr. Houston 10, maximum 20 minutes to give us an overview of the issues, and then members will ask questions. Beyond that, I think Temba wants to say something, and then Tandy's got a hand up, and you're fine. Okay, thank you. Sorry? Yeah, thank you indeed.
Chair, could you confirm that we'll use the convention that we used in our last meeting, where members would have an opportunity to answer three questions, after which the witness will answer those questions?
How the meeting flows. Let me just repeat. It's unnecessary. It's as if the subtext of your question seems to be that something different is going to be done. No. This is the fourth meeting, Comrade Chair. Fourth meeting. There's a framework which the four committees have agreed to in meeting two. There's a court order which we have no choice about. We had a committee meeting including all the, well, as many as could be there. I know Mr. Floyd Chibambu wasn't. Last week 9:15, and this precedent set in the last meeting. So the same would apply here. Thank you. Over to you, Temba.
Thank you, Comrade Eunice. And good morning, comrades. I just felt it is important for us, for ourselves, but also for the gentlemen and lady who have joined us, and the people who are accompanying him, to say that, you know, as I was saying before we started, yes, there have been a legal process before we came here, but I do want to say we would want to have a conversation, not a legal hassle.
Yeah.
So I want to say take it easy, relax, and actually see this as a platform to talk to Parliament and also to talk to the nation, because what happened with stay in office of national significance, and certainly Parliament will not be a disinterested spectator to the whole saga, because as you know the PIC is a significant investor. But also because Parliament represents the people, so anything that has an impact on the welfare of the people and even on lawfulness will be of interest to Parliament. So it was therefore natural that those that we consider to be role players will be asked to come and clear the air, so to speak, without replacing whatever other processes that may unfold. So I just felt it is important to just give that context so that we don't see the process necessarily as an adversarial process. We want to understand, we want to know, and also give everybody an opportunity to say to us, this is what happened. I think if we have that understanding, it should make our interactions much, much easier. However it might come from comrades this side, the underlying intent is just to get clarity. And I think if we can do that, we should be out of here way, way before lunchtime. I don't think we have any intention to be here longer than is necessary. I just felt maybe that part doesn't need to be laid down.
I think your lawyers would have told you, Mr. Yuster, we are not a court of law.
Yeah.
We are not a regulator. But at the same time, as Comrade Gordy is saying, we have a vested interest as a parliament because of the consequences of the collapse of the sign-off shares for public sector employees, other workers, and other sections of the economy. We don't even know at this stage what the full consequences for employment will be. We gather that at this stage there's no significant dent. But also we've communicated repeatedly in the public domain, especially for the Finance and Trade and Industry Committees. We want to look at this experience, Mr. Yuster, and learn from it. And if necessary, tighten the regulations or the laws so that this doesn't happen as often as it seems to happen these days globally and here. So in other words, we're not naive. We think it's partly inherent in the free market economy, the private sector nature of our economy, but also, even within that framework, surely we can do more to deter the prospects, reduce the prospects of this happening. So we want to see what gaps there were in the legislation, what we can do to empower regulators and the Hawks and the NPA to be more effective in this regard. So in short, while we're not here to secure guilt or otherwise of any individual, we don't have the power to do that. We're certainly here to ensure that we learn as much as we can, and we do everything possible to reduce the prospects of this happening. Okay, so that's clear, I think. Tim, do you have anything else to say? No. So shall I hand over to you to make your preliminary overview remarks?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, honorable chairperson. I was asked to briefly give an overview of the circumstances that led to the demise of the Steinhoff share price, which happened in early December. And I would like to share with the committee and committees.
Next we could have of that statement of yours.
It is purely notes of mine.
But you could make it available to
us. I would gladly make it available
as soon as possible.
Afterwards.
Thank you.
Yeah. After the meeting, we can get our people to send it, no problem. I would like to share with the honorable committees a little bit how the group was organized, how it was managed, and specifically our reporting of accounting and accountability of the group was managed during my time. The Steinhoff group was managed, as the committees have heard before, into three different components. We had Europe, which included Asia Pacific, we had Africa, and we had America. And each one of these components had its own controlling company that consisted of its own board of directors, its own audit committee, its own internal auditors, and its own external auditors, each one of those components. I think the honorable committees have heard many times before, so I'm not going to go into the detail of that, that we operated in 30 different jurisdictions with a workforce of more than 130,000 people worldwide. These components that I referred to reported on a quarterly basis to Steinhoff NV, the holding company, on all financial and trading matters during that reporting period. These reports were reviewed and analyzed by the relevant divisions at Steinhoff NV and then submitted to the board of NV on a quarterly basis in written reports by the relevant responsible people, where it was then discussed. The Audit and Risk Committee of Steinhoff NV also considered those aspects of the reports of importance to them prior to the board meetings that were held. I would also like to point out that as the various companies operating in these different jurisdictions, they were subject to laws, financial regulations, accounting rules that were not necessarily the same. And therefore it was important to have the decentralized controls in each country by the local management, and also why each one of these entities had their own external auditors. I would like to share with the committee briefly how that structure worked in a little bit more detail. Steinhoff International NV at the top was audited by Deloitte Netherlands and supported by Deloitte South Africa. If we look at the European cluster, which was the most significant cluster in the Steinhoff group from a size point of view, that cluster consisted of Steinhoff Europe, the holding company, which had six business clusters reporting into that holding company. The auditors of the Steinhoff Europe company, an Austrian company, were Rudel and Partner, an Austrian auditing firm, and I'd like to share with the committees that Rudel and Partner has 111 offices worldwide in 51 different countries and employ more than 4,700 professionals. They were assisted by Commercial Treuhand from Germany with five offices in German cities, including Berlin, with more than 100 professional employees. But the role of that was at the holding company level. The clusters reporting into Steinhoff Europe consisted of Steinhoff UK, which was the whole United Kingdom household goods section, and that was audited and signed off by Deloitte, United Kingdom. Poundland, the general merchandise division in the UK, was audited by KPMG, United Kingdom. Conferama, the biggest cluster of this European entity with more than half the activity and size of the group, was audited by Deloitte France. Poco, the German retailer, was audited by PwC, Germany. Kicker-Leiner, the Austrian retailer and the Central Eastern European countries, was audited by Deloitte, Austria. And Steinhoff Asia Pacific, the whole Australian and New Zealand cluster, was audited by PwC, Australia. Africa, Steinhoff Africa, was audited by Deloitte, South Africa. The JD Group, the household goods cluster in South Africa, was audited by Deloitte, South Africa. At the Pepkor Group, the general merchandise division, was audited by PwC, South Africa. The United States, which was the mattress firm acquisition, and also a big size acquisition in 2016, was audited by Deloitte, United States of America. There were a number of small firms in lesser countries, which was of no significance to the size of the group in terms of value or activity. At the end of each financial year, the various components, as I outlined them underneath these clusters and these three clusters, delivered their consolidated audited financial results to Steinhoff NV, the holding company, where it was consolidated, audited at holding company level, and once signed off by the Steinhoff NV auditors and approved by the audit committee, it was then referred to the board for approval, and then it was released to the market. I just wanted, Honorable Chair, to give the background of how the controls and the reporting worked in the group. I thought it important to share with the Honorable Committees here today, in order to assist, the events and the sequence of events that led to the incidents of December 2017. I would like to take the Honorable Committees slightly back, because it's important to understand the background. In 2007, Steinhoff formed a joint venture strategic partnership with Dr. Andreas Seifert of Austria, a huge retailer in Europe with a considerable footprint, and especially operating under their Möbelix and Domain mass discount brands. The vision between Steinhoff and Seifert was to form a large European household discount chain that could compete with IKEA in terms of size and volume across the whole European Union, and Seifert, being a retailer, and the Honorable Committee, I would like to refer you to that Steinhoff at that stage was a manufacturer and a sourcer, and therefore we needed a competent retail partner, which we thought Dr. Seifert would be, based on his background and his size, what he's built up. Obviously, I will share the detail of that will take hours, and I think I'm always available to give more background to that, but it would be a waste of time. Yeah. Unfortunately, it turned out that Dr. Seifert was the wrong person to go into business with, for various reasons, and Steinhoff's association with Seifert was terminated in March 2015, and that resulted in various litigations with Steinhoff and him, and that was ongoing by December when I left Steinhoff. In January 2015, the German tax authorities carried out a search and seizure operation on the premises of a Steinhoff subsidiary in Germany. It became clear during the search and seizure operation that the previous CEO of Steinhoff's operations in Poland, whose employment was terminated as a result of improper conduct, made allegations to the German tax authorities regarding that Steinhoff subsidiary. During 2015, Steinhoff learned that our ex-strategic partner, Dr. Seifert, made various statements to the German tax authorities with regard to Steinhoff to add to their investigation. It was Steinhoff's and my view that Seifert was attempting to use public prosecutors, capital market regulators, and the press to assist him in his unfounded attempts to obtain information and to influence the outcome of the courts in the ongoing civil litigations, proceedings at that stage between us and him in Germany, Austria, and the Netherlands. Steinhoff's board appointed two respected law and accounting firms in Germany, the main one, Flick, Gocker and Schaumburg, with offices in all six major German cities and Zurich, Switzerland, with 119 partners and 270 professional staff, and a firm dealing with corporate financial law to coordinate this investigation called Corias Global Corporate Finance. Their brief and mandate was to thoroughly investigate and report on all these allegations contained in the Seifert allegations and the German investigation. They were authorized to appoint auditors of all the companies to assist them in their investigations, and Steinhoff has made reference in its listing prospectus in 2015 and ad hoc announcements that they made in Frankfurt and since announcement in Johannesburg, and a press announcement on 4 December 2015 addressing the leading procedures with Seifert and the allegations of accounting made. On 15 September 2017, to get to the events that led up to where we were in December, Mr. Patrick Seinstra, the partner of Deloitte Netherlands, responsible for the Steinhoff NV audit, sent the email addressed to me as CEO of Steinhoff, Mr. Ben Legrandsie, the CFO, Mr. Xavier Botha of Deloitte South Africa, and the European CFO of Steinhoff Europe. In this email, Mr. Seinstra stated that they have received information regarding the German tax investigation that I referred to into Steinhoff Europe from Dr. Seifert's lawyers. He also referred to media articles at that stage which referred to possible accounting irregularities at Steinhoff after Seifert's communication with the media and sought Steinhoff's comments thereon. He also stated that the Lloyds would want to perform additional audit procedures in the light of these allegations and requested a position paper on a number of these aspects. On 19 September, 4 days later, a meeting was held at Stellenbosch with Deloitte, and they were informed by the management, which I referred to before, were all present at this meeting, on the matters and the stage of the investigation instigated by the German authorities. It was explained to the Lloyds that Steinhoff has already instructed in November of 2015 these two German independent firms to investigate each one of those allegations, and that the report thereon will be available within the next couple of weeks. Later in September, the Lloyds addressed a further letter to Steinhoff NV, this time addressed to the chairman of the audit committee on 25 September, in which they again referred to all these allegations which concerned tax planning, non-compliance of tax planning, potential incorrect application of accounting principles specifically referenced as revenue recognition, and transactions with related parties. They pointed out that they have already requested further documentations and explanations from Stein of Europe in the letter that I referred to on September 15, and that they would now require a detailed report on this matter. On the 9th of October, Mr. Boysen, in his capacity as member of the Supervisory Board and the Chairman of the Audit and Risk Committee of Steinhoff, and I, in my capacity as CEO, replied in writing to Deloitte, pointing out that the allegations are not new and that it's an attempt by Dr. Seifert to use public prosecutors, capital market regulators and the press to assist him in his unfounded attempts to influence the litigation with Steinhoff. We also refer to the steps taken by Steinhoff to have these allegations investigated by the independent two legal firms in terms of international financial reporting standards and international standards on auditing. On the 19th of November, the legal companies, through the coordinator, addressed a letter to Deloitte Netherlands and dealt at length, a huge document, with every issue and every query raised by Deloitte. The lawyers pointed out that between December 2015 and November 2017, 2 years, the various professionals involved by these two legal firms have reviewed in excess of 15,000 documents, all contracts and email communication between Steinhoff executives. In addition, they conducted comprehensive interviews with the management of Steinhoff companies and the parties closely aligned with Steinhoff's businesses in Stellenbosch, Westerstede, Germany, Vienna, Austria, Zurich and Geneva, Switzerland. And they have attended a number of meetings and discussions with the Oldenburg Prosecution Office and the German tax authorities. As a result of those reviews, which took 2 years, interviews and discussions, they confirmed, in addition to the findings described in their previous position paper that I referred to Deloitte, and stated categorically the following: we have not found any evidence that would cause us to conclude that the accounting for the reference transactions was not in compliance with applicable IFRS for the Steinhoff Europe group of companies. We have not found evidence that would cause us to conclude that counterparties to the transactions were not independent parties under applicable IFRS for the Steinhoff group of companies. Deloitte came back on the 23rd of November and expressed the view that they need more information and detail from the lawyers and that they would need to do some further substantive testing on some of the transactions. But more surprisingly to us was that they were of the view that a new, brand new investigation should be started because they had queries about the independence of these German firms appointed by the Supervisory Board. In a response to the Deloitte's letters, the legal firms addressed the letters to the Chairman of the Audit Committee on 28 November. And he referred to the meeting with Deloitte, the Steinhoff management, all the component auditors in Amsterdam to discuss the Deloitte queries. He confirmed that the position paper was provided to Deloitte by the lawyers with their queries, and he again pointed out that they could not find any evidence to conclude that the transactions under review were not properly accounted for by the group. On 29 November 2017, the chairman of the Supervisory Board, Dr. Wiese, and the chairperson of the audit committee, Mr. Boysen, had a meeting with three representatives from Deloitte, after which meeting I was informed that the Deloitte decided that this additional investigation would not be necessary anymore and that the focus should now be on finalizing the 2017 audit. However, on the next day, the 30th of November, Deloitte sent a letter to the chairman of the audit committee for the attention of the supervisory board of Steinhoff, requesting that the supervisory board do commission a new independent investigation of the allegations for a firm to be appointed to be approved by Deloitte. This about turn by Deloitte was discussed at the meeting the same day, attended by Dr. Wiese, two partners of Deloitte, and the two senior partners of the legal firms in Germany that conducted the exercise. The Deloitte representative insisted on an additional independent investigation despite what transpired the previous day. Dr. Wiese explained that the investigation by the prosecutors in Germany and the investigation by the two firms appointed by Steinhoff has already taken more than 2 years to date with their findings, and that a new investigation by an independent new party would not be finalized timelessly to enable the financial statements of Steinhoff to be published. This was not acceptable to Steinhoff, as it would put the entire group at risk in the light of bank, bond, governance, and investor expectations. He indicated to them that he will have to discuss this with his supervisory board and the company's lawyers and advisors, which happened over the next 2 days, and that Deloitte would be informed of the decision and the way forward. I was not in South Africa at the time. I was in Europe, in Germany, and arrived back on the morning of Monday, the 4th of December. On my arrival, I discussed the developments with Dr. Wiese, and I shared his view that a further investigation at that late stage, 2 days before the results must be announced, will be ridiculous, and that such an investigation will in all probability delay the finalization of the 2017 financial statements indefinitely, and that would put the group in dire consequences from a cash flow, a credibility, an investor perception, and credit lenders' point of view. My personal view was that Deloitte's mandate should be terminated at that moment in time with immediate effect, and that we should appoint alternative auditors, announce the unaudited results, which was 90% complete throughout the group, as I explained to the honorable committees how that reporting took place from each of the underlying areas. And I would like to say that at that stage, I was now 2 years, 90% of my time as CEO, involved in daily handling these queries, concerns, and the reports by all these German investigators and lawyers that provided their reports. And here, at the late stage of that day, they wanted to start again. So my advice, and Dr. Wiese agreed with that, is that we made an announcement that morning to say that the audit has not been completed, but that the unaudited results will be announced on Wednesday the 6th, and with that is what happened on that Monday. We had various consultations with our legal advisors, especially with the firm Stibbe in Holland, in relation to the relationship with Deloitte. Their opinion was clear that the Deloitte have lost their independence in this matter and was not acting, the real culture of the auditing is to be independent. I'm not blaming the Lloyds for anything. It was a process, and I'm purely sharing facts with the honorable committees. And therefore, my advice was to appoint new auditors, announce the unaudited results, and get the audited results out by the end of January, because we had time till 31 January in terms of the rules to get the audited accounts out, to prevent what I believed would have been a financial disaster to the group with a decision to appoint on that day a brand new investigation after the German authorities have been investigating it for more than 3 years and time and money that the group have spent on these independent German legal firms and auditors to have investigated everything. I realized that a failure by the company to release financial information on the 6th of December as a result of the auditors refusing to sign off, including allegations of accounting irregularities, with a new investigation will have a disastrous effect on the group. Credit lines would have been suspended. A retail group is totally reliant on its cash flow, and therefore it would have had a devastating effect on the operation of the company. Investor confidence in the group would have been lost. Lenders would have lost faith in the group. And my discussion with Dr. Wieser and the legal advisors was that the supervisory board should announce the unaudited results, replace Deloitte at that stage with a firm that was prepared to sign off by the end of January to meet the deadline. And I made it very clear that if that is not the way the board would want to go, I don't see my way forward to go through this after I've been through it for 3 years of my life fighting and explaining the transactions and have received the reports. I was clear in my view, and others shared that with me, that the Deloitte's proposal at that stage in time would have had a devastating effect on the value of the shares. I did not attend the supervisory board meeting the next day and was informed late that evening that the board decided to appoint new independent auditors to start an investigation totally from scratch, and that my proposal was not accepted by the board. The announcement was made that the financial statements will be delayed pending a new independent investigation into the term accounting irregularities, which to me means fraud. And what happened after that announcement on the 6th was that the share price, the credit lines, and the devastation happened, unfortunately. Lastly, and thank you for giving me the time to give my recollection of the events that led to that day in December, I want to place on record that when I left Steinhoff on the 4th of December, I was not aware of any accounting irregularity, what they refer to, in the books of Steinhoff. I thank the Honourable Chair.
Perhaps before we carry on, can you just introduce yourselves? Obviously we know who you are, Mr. Huster. Can we...
Mr. Chair, I'm Francois Fonsel, counsel for Mr. Huster.
Jeremy Muller, counsel for Mr. Huster.
Kali Albertijn, attorney for Mr. Huster.
Jeremy Fonsel, attorney for Mr. Huster.
Members, over to you. Mr. Rees, who else? Mr. Tandy, Mr. Mania, who else? Mr. Lees. I forgot your name, my friend. MacPherson, is it? Mr. MacPherson, yeah. Okay, Mr. Shivambu. All right. About 3 to 4 minutes each, is that okay? Yummy boy. Okay. Thank you. Right, over to you. Colleagues, about 4 minutes each, because we've got time. Is that okay? Or what do you want? Well, I'm cool, whatever. Okay. So if you're
I'm
asking
sorry,
questions...
That microphone was not working.
All right. But just can we get some clarity? What is it you...
3 minutes. Up to 3 questions, 3 minutes. Okay, fine, that's it, like last week. Obviously, there'll be a second round, should there be a need for that, right? Okay, over then, you know the sequence in which your hands went up.
Do I have 30 minutes, Chair?
Yes, but once, because it's four committees, not just finance, we'll have to drop the zero. But you'll have a second bite if it came to it.
Chairman, that's okay, Chair. I'll ask my... She is dressed in DA blue, so...
Yeah, that's worrying. Good. All right, look, we've got to move it. So, as I said, we'll have a second bite.
Disguise, Chair. It's a disguise.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but may I just, at this juncture, just say, I'm sorry, man. I'm having this lingering flu, though it's not contagious, which is why I'm here. So, I regret that I'll be coughing now and then. But I really don't want to tell you what the former Minister of Police asked me to do to decisively tackle my flu. Because the current minister will have to interview him, where I had to repeat what he said. And I'm not going to try that, Comrade Nazi. Okay, excuse me then, Tandi.
Chair, let me say up front, before I ask my 3 questions, the narrative that Mr. Yoste has just presented is not new. It's almost like that's the statement he has decided to stick on for all these years, as and when he's asked questions about Steinhoff in the public discourse. So when, as and when he was reading it, I could play it in my mind exactly what he's going to say. So I'm a little bit disappointed. But I'm going to ask questions that will sound very nonsensical, but they are going to help me to ask my follow-up questions at a later stage. And the first question that I'm going to ask, it's what drives Mr. Yoste as a CEO of the company. I want to understand your mantra. Because once I understand that, then I will be able to connect the dots. And my second question will be for him to explain to us how the search and seizure by the German authorities relates to the allegation of overstating of the financial position of the company. How do you relate it? The third question will be, what was the basis of the drop of the Steinhoff shares in your opinion? Chair, those are my first 3 questions, because those are my opening questions. As you respond to them, they will lead to my real questions. Thank you.
Over to you, sir. You will respond.
Honourable chairpersons, the drive, personally as a CEO of Steinhoff, I started with the company 29 years ago as a 28-year-old, and the vision of driving Steinhoff as a world-class player in the household goods industry and to achieve critical mass and to build up a group that could compete with IKEA, which was a principal idol for us as a company that's built a global network. In our early days as youngsters, we all worked in the furniture factories that exclusively produced for IKEA, so we were very exposed to their way of doing business. Mr. Kamprad of IKEA was probably the idol and the mentor of how to build an international group in that industry. And therefore, achieving that goal to have a global group throughout all three the continents that we do in business with, America was added much later, was the goal. We realized in the early 2000s, that without a retail footprint, It will not be possible to achieve those goals because IKEA was a clear example where vertical integration, where they owned their own forests, they had their own factories, they made their own designs, and then they owned their own shops, and that's what led in 2007, which I referred earlier to in my presentation, that led to the strategic partnership with Seifert to have completed that last footprint of putting the retail chains into it. And in December when I left, this company consisted of more than 12,000 retail shops throughout the world and had its own factories and had its own logistics division. And that was the goal that we derived. That goal was far not complete at the stage when I had left the company. But the drive was a drive to build the business. The German tax authorities, when they did their investigation into the books of the German subsidiary, as I referred to it, queried transactions entered into between German affiliates of Steinhoff and Swiss companies of Steinhoff, which one of the principles of the group was that all brands that the group owned, we put together in a Swiss brand management company, and that company licensed the retail throughout the world with those brands and earned royalties on it. And the investigation or the queries at the time was the transfer pricing and the valuation of how those brands were calculated. But obviously it's a long, complicated thing, but I hope that answers the question. As I referred to in my introduction, my personal view is that when a company does not announce its results on time, if a company has queries about accounting irregularities, and after everybody expected, after more than 2 years, the outcome of the independent investigation that has already been done, and suddenly there starts a new one, all confidence in a company is lost. And when that happens, the share value drop immediately like a drop. But that's my personal view.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have three questions and a brief comment. First, when you resigned on or about the 5th of December 2017, you distributed a letter via email to staff members of Steinhoff, which inter alia read, "I made some big mistakes and have now caused financial loss to many innocent people." What big mistakes did you make which eventually caused financial loss to innocent people? That's the first question. The second question is that if you look at the code of conduct of Steinhoff International Holdings NV, under a heading which reads, "The group does not condone any act or attempts at fraud and corruption," it reads that no employee may engage in any act involving fraud, corruption, money laundering, dishonesty, and deception. Can you say, as an employee of Steinhoff, who was bound by the code of conduct, that you complied with the code of conduct of Steinhoff International Holdings NV, given the fact that it says no employee may engage in any act involving fraud, corruption, money laundering, dishonesty, and deception? Then my third question. When, on the version that we have, the bolt from the blue finally struck on or about Monday the 5th of December 2017, one of the people who you once regarded as a friend apparently referred to you as, and I quote, "a fucking psychopath," presumably because you had lied to him convincingly
for years. Is it, given the fact that it now appears that you lied convincingly for years about the state of the company,
Shepherd,
an accurate description of your personality, and do you
just hang on the point of order?
Even if it's a quote, is it permissible to quote the words that are not permissible, are not allowed in Parliament? Because
yeah, okay, let's have a
we understand
you could have said
the figure
or effort or something, right? Fine. Okay, it's been done. I think it's not appropriate, even if it's a quotation. But I think, Mr. Mania, can we avoid the usual melodrama? Just ask the questions, right?
Thank you, Chair. Let me just conclude then with a comment. Mr. Houston, what surprises me most about your effort is there's no contrition, no apology to the thousands of people, including pensioners, who you yourself concede suffered major financial loss. You come over, frankly, a little bit like Jeff Skilling did at before Congress in the United States.
It's true, I hope, Mr. Houston, you do, but nevertheless, over to the last reference, I mean.
Honorable Chair, I sent on the 5th of December, after I was informed that the board took the decision to appoint a new investigation, and I became not the CEO anymore. I sent to a number of my close colleagues that reported to me a SMS, and in that SMS I referred to big mistakes that I made that has led to this, and the mistake that I referred to was the choice in 2007, and they were all very well aware of that, by Seifert, that was our strategic partner, that failed. And that has cost the company, since 2015, all the drama that it went through, the fights, the financial losses, and also that led to this perception of accounting irregularities, and where we were at that stage not being able to complete the financial statements in time, and obviously the financial loss would have been devastated to a lot of people. The code of conduct of Steinhoff, according to my knowledge, is applicable to all staff members of the group. I am not aware of anybody during the period that I was there. We had quarterly audit committee meetings, internal audit, whistleblowing facilities. There was incidences of theft or fraud on a smaller level, but certainly I was not aware of anybody that acted deliberately or knowingly in contradiction to that code of conduct. Chairperson, I am not in a position to comment on the last question because I'm not aware about the statement or have ever heard it. I would like to say that I never lied about the activities of the company as the allegation was made, and I don't understand the last point.
That because the job of chairs is to facilitate replies to questions. The only basis on which you could turn down answering a question specifically, as your lawyers will guide you in regard to, is if you can show that in some or other way it's legally valid for you not to answer the question, given the inquiries by the prosecuting authorities, the Hawks, the German investigating authorities, and so on. So I have no doubt, Mr. Mania, Tandy is not happy with answers to her questions, too. So I can't elevate, I don't think we can, unless there are two chairs. The way we work, let you know, is three chairs are co-chairing. But because the issues fall mainly under finance, the finance committee chair has to chair. And however, the finance committee chair can't decide on his, well, in my case, his, on his own. The other chairs have a say, and if the committee members reject what we say, then unless we can show a rule that fortifies our position, they have the decision-making powers here on our meeting proceeds. What I'm suggesting is members can come back, because I'm a bit worried. All the, you know, you're answering in generalities. May I at this juncture just say that there's very little you've said in your statement we don't already in some other form know. And it's not helping you, because members, I've been around for a long time, and members are going to get heated up. So I'd prefer that, unless you have a strong legal argument to the contrary, that you answer more precisely. Having said that, can we move on to the next question? Let's see where things go, and then we come back to the people who've asked questions. Bearing in mind that we are not an inquisitor, is that the word, inquisitor? Yeah, we can't be that. We want to be that. I know some members want to be that. Do you think any of us...
Don't mind, David.
Yeah. None of us doesn't want to be that, but we have limited powers in what we can do, and the courts have intervened. So let's respect the courts. Over to... it's our friend there. Is it Mr. Leaf and then you? Yeah, sorry. Look, you know the numbers. Number 3, number 4. It is number 5. Number 6, Mr. Shivambu. Number 7, Yami Boy. Okay, numbers, right? Okay. Imkuleko, you want to speak? Number 8, there it is. Peggy, number 9. My sister there, number 10. Yeah, okay, good. There it is. We've got 10 people. It's a long day then. Temba, no one's listening to us. They want to, but we'll settle 13-0 if we have to. Over to number 3.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Yuste, you've painted a picture of really quite extensive due diligence that was undertaken over a period of some 3 years, and which you say found nothing undue in that process of 3 years. And that the reason that the share price collapsed was that the investors and lost confidence in the company, because you weren't able, the company was not able to report as it was due to report. It seems then that if that is the case, would you agree that once the investigations which are currently underway are completed, it's unlikely that issues of fraud or misrepresentation are going to be found, and that the asset, the value of the group, will ensure that the share price then regains what it has lost, and the losses incurred by investors will be recovered? Is that a picture of that you suggest will unfold, given your assertion that a 3-year investigation did not reveal any irregularities? If that's not the position, if indeed the information that is in the public domain is correct, and that there are significant irregularities and overstating of the value of the company as opposed to the value of the shares, put the share value aside, that's your links, I know, then are you would that suggest to you that 3 years of investigations were in fact flawed? And why would that be? And then, Mr. Chairman, I just want to say that the issue is very much an issue of losses to the PIC and the pensions and so on. But this is, as Mr. Yuste, you have pointed out, was a massive, massive company. The investors have come from all over the world, really, and it's had an enormous impact on the South African, the perceptions about South Africa. Surely, you feel at least some obligation to be contrite about what the situation is, given that, unless it is your view that in fact this whole thing is simply a result of a civil action from Dr. Seifert, and that there's no merit in any of the accusations about irregularities in the company. Thank you.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Blame my flu, okay.
Honorable Chair, the issue about the recovery of the asset value or the regaining of share value into the future is obviously a very difficult topic to answer, to look into the future. My view, if the investigation is complete, and I have no knowledge of that investigation or anything that has been done there since I left on the 5th of December, the company has disposed of a lot of assets and factories, so the company that is left is not the same company that was there last year, and therefore it is impossible for me to speculate on what that would look like, irrespective of accounting irregularities in terms of the assets and the business. I mean, the perception, and I want to say that, if you ask my views and to be more direct, is that this company wasn't about accounting. This was a business with 12,000 stores and 50 factories around 50 countries, different countries in the world, giving employment from when we started with a couple of hundred people to 150,000 people. And therefore, the investigations where I was involved, I have shared with this committee the results of that and hope that that would have given a guideline of the events in detail that led to the events in the beginning of December. But I have no knowledge of where the outcome of the future investigation is going to be, and would only be in a position to respond then on those allegations. In terms of the irregularities and whether the first investigations was flawed, if the new investigation find different outcome, as I've said, I have not seen any of those investigations or questions and have had no contact with anybody of the company since the 5th of December, so I cannot comment on that at this stage, and it would be unfair. Of course, the losses to the PIC, pension funds, colleagues, people all over the world is something that, I mean, I can speak about it, but that was not the reason why I came here. And obviously, I worked 29 years for this company, every day of my life, to build it and to travel all over the world, traveling 200 days a year into the different countries of the world. And therefore, it saddened me what has happened to Steinhoff and the circumstances that led to it and the losses incurred by pension funds, banks, colleagues and people. But therefore, the investors in this company invested in what they saw. They visited the businesses. They traveled with us. They went to look at the shops. They visited the factories. They didn't look at the accounting records. It was a business that was built over 29 years, creating more than 100,000 jobs. And we were hoping to build it into the future to be a big, successful player in the market.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Eustace, three questions, quite simple. Since 2013, since the listing, how much capital has been moved overseas by the group? And on what vehicle, in which mechanisms have been the funds been moved out of the country into the foreign operations? The second question is, Did you take any short positions on Steinhoff stock in 2017? And then the third question is, I noted in your version that you presented earlier that when you returned from overseas in early December 2017 and you had conversations with Dr. Visser, he informed you that he was aware of investigation going on in Germany for the last 2 years. Now, Dr. Visser has testified on a couple of occasions before this committee that this entire thing came like a bolt from the blue. Are you saying that that statement by Dr. Visser is inherently false? Because if he was aware of it for 2 years, how could he say it came like a bolt from the blue? Those are my questions, Chair. Thank you.
Over to you, sir.
Honourable Chairpersons, the listing happened in 2015, the date, early December. Quite to the contrary, one of the conditions for allowing the listing in Frankfurt by the South African Reserve Bank was that prior to that listing, Steinhoff had to repatriate it, all the money that was invested overseas from the original listing in 1998. Back to South Africa prior to the listing in Frankfurt being allowed. So Steinhoff in 2014 and 15 raised capital offshore only from offshore investors, and all that money was repatriated to South Africa to bring back all the money that the Reserve Bank allowed the company to take out of the country during that period. I have never sold short or sold any kind of shares in my whole career with the company. The timeline that I presented to the committees and the letters and who was copied and who was part of the communication and who all the reports went to, I shared with the committee, and as we've mentioned, we'd be quite happy to make that available to you, and then you can look at who was aware of what, at what stages. I wouldn't like to comment on other people's testimony.
Mr. Yoster, in the previous hearings held by these joint committees, Mr. Ben Lekranje put the demise of Steinhoff squarely at your feet, and he said that you were aware of the irregularities. Now, as you had said in your opening statements, that irregularities when it comes to this point refers to fraud, and I see your counsel shaking his head, but that was what was reported and that was exactly what was said. With respect to a WhatsApp message that you sent to colleagues after your resignation, you stated, and I quote, "It's time to move on and take the consequences of my behavior like a man." Can you please tell me what behavior you referred to that is that requires consequences, and what consequences you believe befit the behavior displayed by yourself? Thank you.
Honourable Chair, the SMS that I sent to my close colleagues, which I referred earlier to on a previous question, the consequences that I referred to was that I have left my life of 29 years with this company that I started with my colleagues, and that was the end of that career for me, and the mistakes, as I referred previously, was the choice of a strategic partner that totally made that dream come true collapsed with Seifert's behavior and what happened subsequent to that. The irregularities that I referred to, that means fraud to me, I was referring to the SENS announcement of Steinhoff on the 6th of December, the first time that word came up. Again, I have tried to share with the committee, not to waste your time,
who was when informed about all the detail during this investigation and the letters written, and again on that, one will be able to see who was part, who was copied, and who was informed about that.
Next, please.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I think let's take note that the narrative is changing now, because what Mr. Eustace is doing is to now shift the blame to the strategic partner of irregularities around tax planning and, well, broadly, like the tax structure which was avoiding taxes that happened prior to the merger of the companies to constitute a huge retail outlet company in terms of what had got to happen, and that there were ongoing investigations which got to be revealed and later on collapsed the entire stain of group. And then he then says that he was never part of that throughout the entire process. But the chairperson of Stain of Group, Mr. Christo Vizi, did not think so. The chairperson of the audit committee, Steve Boysen, did not think so, because they are squarely locating all these irregularities on him. And he is distancing himself in terms of what happens. But there's something interesting that is coming up now, because when we asked questions to Christo Vizi, he said that he became aware of all the irregularities and all the wrongdoing 3 days before the 6th of December, 2017. But from the current submission, an illustration is being made that from November there were engagements, there were interactions with Deloitte, letters were written, and Steve Boysen was aware. You'd remember that when we asked that, okay, if Christoph using you 3 days before, when did Steve Boysen know? They said possibly a month before, when they gave official evidence. It looks like someone is misleading us. Someone is lying to us here in Parliament. Can we then get clarity of when did Christo Vizi and Steve Boysen become aware of all these problems that led to the collapse of Steinhoff? And can we be given illustration in that regard, like the email interchanges and the confirmation of the meetings that were done? But also, I'm concerned, I would want to believe Mr. Eustace, but why, when we said you must come to Parliament to account, you then rushed to lawyers and tried to interdict us with court processes? We had to take an extraordinary step of subpoenaing you, like to subpoena you to come here. Why do you come with an army of counsel if your narrative is that you are not responsible for anything? What are you hiding in terms of all these issues? And to have to properly locate this chair is that our major concern is that the government employees pension fund through the PIC is exposed to Steinhoff as a shareholder of shares worth billions of rand. The estimation at that time was that the PIC could have lost about 20 billion rand. But also the PIC had given a loan to a Jayanranaidu to buy shares into Steinhoff through a project they called Project Lancaster, 10 billion rands, like 9.9 billion rands, which are pensioners' money, which was exposed to Steinhoff, and through the reckless management, we do not know of who now, because this one says it's this one, the other one says it's the other one, the other one says it's the people in Germany, they were trying to settle scores and everything else there. That is the major concern that we are concerned about, that how did we get to lose definitely more than 20 billion rand through reckless management of Steinhoff in terms of all those issues. So I wanted to understand, like, who is responsible for what? When did the chair who is suing, like Christopher Vizzo, who is suing Steinhoff now, become aware of all these shenanigans that led to the collapse of Steinhoff. And then the last question is, how much money in rand terms did you, Mr. Juster, lose in the collapse of Steinhoff? Did you have shares in Steinhoff? And if you didn't, if you did not have shares, why not? Because if you were not exposed at all and you are the CEO, what about the other investors, their confidence in putting money into a company where the CEO is not exposed at all, and can just do all sorts of things, knowing that even if this collapses, there's not going to be personal liability and loss that is made. How much, in terms of rent value, were you exposed to this Dean of Group? Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Chair, the first question dealing to the various dates, if it is with your guidance, I think the best will be rather to now go through all those dates again, that if those documents is provided to you, it's quite easy to follow the timeline, who was copied where and when was who informed, in terms of what I have provided.
Maybe we need some guidance from the committee, right? Firstly, if you gave an overview of the issues, will that be acceptable? Secondly, it's inevitable that the key figures will be giving us their own versions. And the question the committee might want to apply its mind to is it our responsibility to find out exactly who said what to whom and who's accountable? Or is that the role of the regulators, the Hawks, the NPA, and so on? If that is our role, I'm not saying we discuss that now, Mr. Shivambu, something we should discuss, where we're taking this, then it means we have to set up a special committee. Or how are we going to do that? So in the meanwhile, can we agree on the following? That committee can discuss that in a week's time on how we want to proceed, because we have four meetings now. We were not letting up, Mr. Huston, and Steinhoff, I think Robert Dreamen's here on it, we're not letting up. And the regulators, they're all here. No, we're not letting up. The next term of Parliament will continue, the sixth term of Parliament. So what I'm saying in short is, why can't you give an overview of the answer to Mr. Shivambu for now, and you provide the documents, and then the committees will meet and decide how we take the matter forward. That's all. So a quick summary. In other words, we don't want a full account again, but answer it simply, as precisely as you can. You don't have to give exact dates, say, you know, it happened 2 weeks before and so on, and then we can look at the documents. Is that agreeable, Comrade? That's fine.
Okay. Honourable Chair, as I've said in the presentation, the first query from Deloitte came on the 15th of September, and that was shared with Dr. Boysen at the time. Obviously, the chairman of the audit committee's duty is to inform the chairman of the supervisory board, and I'm not sure exactly when did that happen, but certainly in November, Dr. Wieser was close involved in terms of the discussions with Deloitte. Honourable member, in terms of coming to Parliament, I want to share with you that the invitation to appear on the 31st of January was written to us in terms of appearing on behalf of Steinhoff. I know that the Honourable Chairman believes that that is a lame excuse, but at that stage I was not part of Steinhoff, and the questions and the agenda for that day, and I don't think I need to go into that and read that out, so I don't want to preempt that, was that was declined.
Got most
we
of
don't
the
want
the
to
letters.
Go there,
yeah.
Please.
You know what,
yeah.
You've okay. Got, Floyd, Mr. Shivambu, look in your file, you'll find it there. I mean, the whole committee agrees.
Can you please allow him to respond?
Yes, can you please listen to what I'm saying?
Yeah,
the documents are available.
I'm
the chair of the committee here. I'm saying to you, reply briefly. The members have all the documents, right? Because your letter was utterly lame.
Allow him to respond.
Right.
Yes.
I will, and I'm chairing, not
yes.
You. Right. Mr. Juster, I am the chair, coordinating chair. saying to you, we're not covering ground we covered before. I'm also suggesting to you, instead of giving specious answers, can you focus on the issue? You said you're not coming. We had endless exchanges with you. Finally, you came. Let's move on. Right? The question he's asking you, though, is if you have nothing to hide, why have you got a battery of lawyers?
In the circumstances since the 4th of December and the investigation that started new, I believed it was in my interest to appoint a legal team and to assist me through this process, and it was on their advice that I did not attend the January and March meeting, as I've said in my affidavit. In terms of the Honourable Member's question about the PIC, I would only can share with you the information that I do have. I was involved with the Lancaster transaction in terms of the investment into Steinhoff. My knowledge of that transaction, Honourable Chair, is that the 10 billion rand, roughly, investment of Lancaster was fully hedged with an international bank covering any losses to the PIC. That's my recollection and knowledge of that transaction.
But Chair, there's a question about his personal exposure to Steinhoff as to how much money did he lose?
Oh, I apologize.
The other lost.
I apologize. Yes, sorry about that. He's right. He asked you a specific question. Specific answer, please.
I have a family trust that has an investment company, and at the date of the Steinhoff demise, we had through indirect holdings 68 million Steinhoff shares at that day of the demise of the company.
I had asked in rent terms, I actually said in rent terms, what is the value of those 68 million shares? How much did you lose personally in terms of the whole collapse? We know the numbers which Christo reportedly lost when the whole group collapsed. What about you and your family trust and everything else?
I think because if you do that and everybody else has to do it, he's right. Basically, what does it mean in rand?
Well, it's only on what day do you want to take the share price? The day before the collapse?
I don't get now disingenuous. On the day of the collapse.
Then it is roughly about 3 billion rand.
3 billion rand. Thank you, Mr. Shivamba. Your questions answered. Next, please. Yeah.
Good morning, Mr. Joseph. I'm here. No, I'm struggling to understand you properly. Are you saying that we should forget your role at all? Or your other team of people, when they came in front of us, they trying to work out mitigations and trying to work out how to recover or how to assist what happened in the company. And you are saying that on the day of your resignation, that's the last time your memory worked of how the company was being operated. But as the CEO throughout, what have you been doing? Why did you arrive where we are? I hear you all your international analysis, but I want to hear from the South African perspective. I'm dealing with voters in South Africa. What is it that you've been doing to assist? Because when the Germans start, what did you do in South Africa? That's my first interest, because it seems as if none of you remember what did South Africa, Deloitte did in South Africa to be able to make sure that we don't arrive where we are today, where that loss has an impact on ordinary South Africans. That's what I'm interested in. That's my first question. I don't hear you talking about the debt. Did you ever have some debt? And debt within your company that has made us to lose what is actually within the company. You can't just say that just because of OTT. Give us the detail. What is it that has happened? It can't be just one day. So you speak to Deloitte, and then after that day, everything collapsed. It can't be like that. You're supposed to tell us what happened to your assets, what happened to everything within the company itself. That is operational, so that when you start to answer the phone calls from your colleagues and everybody, what did you think would be happening from there on? What would you be your answer? Because I have to give answers to the ordinary South Africans that what happened to this company and what impact does that have on the PIC in South Africa and the consequences of that, because any voter or any person like me who represents South Africa would want to know what role have you played and what have you been doing in engaging your own members within the South African context as a CEO, toward the impression they're giving us that you disappeared from this. And everybody says you have just appeared today because you're coming to Parliament. But there hasn't been anything where you've been able to tell us, as South Africans, what happened and what is going to be our own recovery. I mean, what is going to be your contribution into the near future. And my final question is, what should be our expectation? How do we recover our money from you? Or is this, if it is not a Ponzi scheme, or is this a person of stealing money? Because so far I've not learned anything that, as the chair said, that could help us as South Africans not to see the repeat of what has happened. That would then call upon us as representatives of the people to continue investigating this case, because you are giving us the organogram. You're not giving us the substance of how did you lose within the South African context and how are we going to recover our money before we continue sending the hawks after you to assist us to make sense of how the losses come across.
Honourable Chairpersons, the events, as I have shared with the committees that happened on the 4th and 5th of December, as I've mentioned before, based on the fact that a brand new investigation started straight thereafter, I appointed my legal assistants. And our situation was that Steinhoff ceased at that stage immediately all communication with me. I was informed and understood that nobody at Steinhoff had to have any further communication with me or discussions with me. We have at this stage, after that time, I have attended a interview with the FSB in Pretoria and answered questions. We have offered already in February, just after your 31 January meeting, our assistance to the Hawks in any information that they would like from us. And we were requested from PwC that if they want to ask us questions, to put their questions in writing and to provide us with the documents, because I have virtually no documents left from the day I left. I lost my email, my telephone and any records that I've got, and therefore that was the assistance that we offered, and nobody from Steinhoff seeks any assistance from my side. Chairperson, the reference to a Ponzi scheme is something that a company with 12,000 stores and 130,000 people working there and factories and assets, I don't see that anything as that. The divide, the demise in the value, I have tried to explain to the committee members that when a company in the public domain loses the support and the faith of the investors, then that happens. And with not releasing the financial results as a result of the sequence of events is my view why the share price collapsed on that day. It is impossible for me to go forward of what is going to be saved or not, because it depends what the assets get sold for, of whether the debt, I mean, a lot of the debt has been redeemed, and I cannot comment. I only can also see there, the same as you, what is in the public eye, what happens after the 1st of December. Simkuleko,
is it?
Yes,
Mr.
Chair. You know, I think there's a term in this parliament, we call it meanders. And quite frankly, that's what we're doing. And on one hand, it's irritating, on the other hand, it's frustrating. Mr. Yusta, you know, I would imagine that if I was going to be losing 3 billion rands, I would not just up and leave. After 29 years of service, just on the basis of one decision, you literally, with all due respect, threw your toys out the court. I am really, really interested for you to just be very frank with us as to the reasons as to why you left, before we actually drill down into anything else. So a new investigation is being proposed, and you don't like that decision, and so it's taken, and so you feel, well, to hell with it, I'm leaving. 29 years, 3 billion rands. You've said the drive is that you wanted to build this company all these years. You spoke with immense passion. And with one decision, you up and go. I'm not convinced by that at all. And the second question, Chairperson, is, did you have any confidence in those that were investigating? Because the elaborate term that you use is that it was independent investigators. So if you had confidence in that process, why didn't you have confidence in the second process? Because my reading is that probably the second one arose because the first one was a whitewash. And so this time around, probably things would have been exposed in a manner which you are not comfortable with. And therefore, that being the case, to absolve yourself of any association with Steinhoff, the easy way out was to leave. And now you can boldly sit there and say, I've got no access to phone, no access to email, no access to documents, and that automatically absolves you from any accountability. So I'm interested to know as to the fundamental reasons as to why you did not have any confidence in the second process. Safe to say, of course, I'd not buy the one that says, well, you know, investors and so on, because you had put 29 years into this. And I doubt that anybody who had built a house up for 29 years would, at the first go, with the smell of a fire, leave. So that's the second one. And then, thirdly, Chair, when we've had other hearings with your former colleagues, and I use the term very cautiously because, quite frankly, I don't want to dissociate you from Steinhoff, so I use the term respectively in terms of former colleagues, but be that as it may, your audit function seems to have been in shambles in all material respects, actually. It was not coordinated. It was troublesome and cumbersome, and probably in the main is the reason why you were open up to the kind of risk that you were, which eventually collapsed at. So, and I'm very interested to know that when you received those audit reports as CEO, what was your reaction? What action steps did you take to practically and positively react and respond to what audit function had put to you, as warped as it was? Because then a decision was taken to say, no, actually, maybe it would be best to reconfigure it and realign it, and that's what some of the evidence that we've heard. So, in a nutshell, were you satisfied with the manner in which audit function was actually structured? Because the fact that is, as far as we are concerned here, it was one of the funniest things we've ever seen. How were you satisfied? Now, maybe let me just put it there. Your own assessment of audit function, because in the absence of strong controls, in the absence of a functional audit structure, you are bound to have these things. Because, Chair, the one comment I want to make is, none of us in this parliament or in this country are idiots enough to believe that this happened like a heart attack. It didn't just happen. and everybody is absolving themselves. So, I mean, whilst people may say I found out late, just know that none of us buy that story, actually.
Honourable Chair, the first question, I went through a 2.5 year period dealing with the issues from the German tax investigation started, the legal fights with Seifert, and the events as I've described them that led up to the events early in December. I've already shared with the committee that my decision was, and my personal view was, that the start of a new, brand new investigation on the 5th of December will not be completed. Why will it be completed quicker than 2 years if all the other people have taken 2 years? And therefore I knew that the company will be left in absolute limbo with no financial size figures and with no investor confidence, and obviously pointing fingers at me as the CEO who could not complete and deliver the closure of the 2017 accounts. And at that stage, that was my decision, that I had enough. It was not about losing money or what was at stake. It was a decision I took, that it was I wanted to force them to take the right decision for the company and to mitigate the matter. In terms of the second process, I can't comment on that. I don't even know what the scope or the brief is. I don't know what the outcome is, and obviously the accountability will determine by the outcome of that report, and I cannot comment about that until I've seen that, and I haven't been part of that up to now. The audit function of the group, Honourable Chair, I have to point out that the audit team of a listed public company is the function of the audit committee, not of the CEO. And therefore, I'm not a member of that committee. I've looked at what I've seen, and I was satisfied, in my personal opinion, that the audit process was professional. I've given the committee an outline per cluster who did the audit, the firms involved, and I'm not criticizing that process. I personally was satisfied from my point of view and my obligation towards it.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Mr. Yus, I just want to establish with you in terms of your office that you occupied as a CEO, that who else do you think you can blame on all these matters, considering that you were the CEO at that time? The second question, to what extent do you accept responsibility on the matters raised on you after the 5th of December 2017? The third question, probably it's a question that I will ask in terms of not that we are here. What do you think will be the correct recourse to investors in the same matter that we are speaking about today? Thank you.
Honorable Chair, the question in referring who else to blame, I did not come here to blame anybody. I personally believe that all the colleagues at Steinhoff that I worked with over my 29 years have always acted in the best interest of the company. The most people there gave their lives to that company. It was part of the daily DNA. It was a business that was built to growth. It was a business to be successful and a business to create employment and also to enjoy. So it's not I don't blame anybody for what happened at Steinhoff. That was not what it was about. The responsibility in terms of the matters raised,
At the end of the day, I have given my version and my participation until the 4th of December, and anything that happens subsequent to that, I have not been involved in, and we will have to see the outcome of the report, and then we will deal with those matters, and whatever those reports say will have to be tested. The recourse by investors will, I think, be influenced by the outcome of the previous discussion of what is the outcome. And investors, of course, at the end of the day, have civil claims that they can lay if they believe they have that, and a lot of them have, and that process has started.
Thanks, Chair. When Mr. Ben Lihlanje appeared before the committees, he made the claim that he was actually laboring under the impression that within Steynhoff group, there was a buying group, and he eventually discovered that there was none, you know. And he was actually pointing fingers at you as the former CEO of the group, that it happened that you were actually concealing some information from them. Was there a buying group? That is a direct question for me. If not, what could have been the reasons for you to conceal that kind of an information from them? My second question is, as a former CEO of a global company like that, like Steynhoff, what advice would you give to any of the aspirant, you know, corporate groups who might be thinking of establishing international companies like Steynhoff International? Thank you.
Honourable Member, the reference to a buying group, I can confirm to the committees that Steynhoff were a member to various buying groups all over the world. The buying groups had other retail members. Some of them were partnerships and some of them were companies. And certainly when I left on the 4th of December, they were a buying group at Steynhoff. These buying groups were audited in the previous years and were part of the investigation by the German legal firms that reported on them. In terms of advice, I'm obviously very cautious to give any advice after my failure to pick a reliable strategic partner in terms of international expansion. But my personal view would be that if I look back at the mistakes, certainly to have grown too fast, too quickly, into too many countries, and to rely on a very close association and full trust, that would be something that people have to be cautious with, because that was the lesson I've learned.
All right. I'm trying to check. Comrade Tleko. Yeah, let me allow Comrade Tleko, because it's his first bite, and then we can maybe look at coming around again. Yes, Comrade.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Mr. Houston, I just need to be clarified on some few things. But by the way, I do also want to state that I think with respect to some of the questions posed by Honourable Member Shengwa has not necessarily been responded to. Now, nevertheless, I will want to latch on to some of the issues that he has also, you know, stepped onto. You formed a strategic partnership in 2007. In 2017, that became the basis for you to leave Steynhoff. Now, the question is, why would it take you between 2007 and 2017 to realize that there is a problem with the strategic partnership that you entered into? Now, the second question is that you also had objections to an investigation, that a brand new investigation in your terms, that was to be undertaken by Steinhoff, regardless of the global investigation that had been undertaken, and it was, you know, in 2 days a report was to be presented, and so it goes. Now, I just need to understand as to, and in your words you say it didn't make sense that 2 days before the report is released, there is then commissioning of a new investigation. Why did you have a problem with this? If you say it didn't make sense, in what respect exactly didn't it make sense? There's some way you said, and I hope I had you correctly here, you say that very same investigation was to be approved by Deloitte. Is that correct? So how do they come into the picture insofar as approvals and strategic decisions are concerned in an organization such as the Steinhoff? Thank you very much.
Honorable Chair, the strategic partnership, as I've mentioned, started in 2007 with Dr. Seifert. I think it's like most relationships, the beginning is always the best. So from 2007 to 2011, this partnership was very successful, and that led to the acquisition of Conferama, which really gave us the critical mass, which was the vision of that strategic partnership to go forward in Europe. It also led to the assisted acquisition of Kicker-Leiner in Austria, and that's when in 2013-14 that happened. The real side of Seifert came out, where this was now the first time where we made an acquisition in his home territory where he was the king. And that relationship exploded in November 2014 for the first time. And that's why we cancelled that relationship in March of 2015. And that's when my report started today to give you the events since then, which led to where we ended up in December 17. In terms of the brand new investigation, I said that to have that investigation start brand new, my problem with it was that I knew it will not be completed within time to get the audited results out before January 18, which was the deadline. And without financial statements, the company will not survive, because the bankers and funders will not continue. And therefore, I resisted that and put my job at risk for it, to say that it will not be completed. I think honorable members have heard now. It's now on the go for 8 months, and it cost 200 million rand by now. And hopefully we'll get a report by the end of the year. But that was too late. The investigation requested by Deloitte, the honorable member was correct. I quoted out of their letter of the 30th of November, where they insisted on this new investigation, and they wanted to have the firm to be appointed to be approved by them. It was a request in their letter.
All right. We'll come back, comrades. I just want to give Comrade Jones here before we move to the second round. Welcome, Comrade Mosona.
Thank you, Honourable Co-Chair. And good morning, Mr. Yuster. Mr. Yuster, you referred on many occasions to the mistakes you had made and regretted. And working from that point, someone had asked the question about, well, what kind of advice would you give to any aspirant who wanted to enter the, become a businessman, an industrialist, etc.? So it sounds like you're acknowledging there were mistakes. Now, would you agree then that the obfuscated structure of the companies of the Steinhoff conglomerate, as it were, facilitated an enabling environment for the mistakes you made? Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, the mistakes, as I've mentioned before, over a 29-year period, you make lots of mistakes, so that certainly happened. The structure of Steinhoff on a decentralized basis for an international group that operates in different jurisdictions, different culture, different language, different rules, I would not blame that structure for what happened at Steinhoff. I certainly would say that the biggest strategic mistake we made was to pick the wrong partner. And that obviously leads to financial losses and issues that we had to sort out. And then we became enrolled in a litigation world. I was in court every day, virtually those last year. And then with the investigations that started, that became the role to play. But to blame the structure would be not fair.
All right. Comrades, can we go second round?
No, I expect you to
raise. Something. We'll also have three questions, right? If the rules don't say chairpersons can't have questions. That's what members sometimes think. My sister in particular, but... I don't want to provoke her. Firstly, look, on the more serious note, I don't want to provoke you. On the first, more serious note, look, Mr. Yuster, you know, you're coming across almost like you're a Mother Teresa of Steinhoff, right? It's only when you're being prodded by members that you concede. Prior to the nudging and cajoling, almost goading by members, there wasn't even an inkling of regret. Like, you know, there's not like a sliver of acknowledgement of the severe gravity of what's happened here. And I think there are two different ways, I'd like to respond to this, of incriminating yourself in a situation like this. One is to say things that you don't necessarily have to say in a public hearing, a public briefing of the sort, which could be used against you by the Hawks, in our case, South Africa, or the NPA, or one of the regulators here or elsewhere. And obviously the lawyers have discussed this ad nauseum. I'm not expecting you to do that. But there's another way of incriminating yourself, surely. It's if you say nothing. Then it just reinforces all the allegations that have been made about you. Now, you brought this upon yourself, Mr. Yuster. There was no great rocket science research required. You, we are told, Mr. Mania referred to emails. I've read in the media, WhatsApp or SMS messages, where you accepted guilt. So, can I ask you, my precise question then would be, don't you think you could say more and be more specific and precise without incriminating yourself in the first sense, meaning, you know, the stuff you, or the answers you give being used against you, and undermine your right to a fair trial in a court of law or a fair hearing in a regulatory process hearing? Secondly, this is not our words, Mr. Yuster, not the words of, you know, melodramatic, ideologically driven, vote-catching MPs. These are commentators with years and years of technical experience, technical experts who say that this qualifies to be possibly the biggest corporate scandal in South Africa. It has global dimensions, as you know. So what is your response to those who say that? Thirdly, even if, as incredulous as your answers are, we were to believe it, let's say, don't you think you are accountable as the CEO? The board chair is accountable, and the CEO, whatever happens, whatever your precise complicity in what happened or otherwise, you are accountable. That's what the CEO does. The board chair does. I said last week, and I'm right to say this, I'm sure, if you're chairing a board of an NGO, let's say, and you have no idea, you know, you're stuck in Cape Town and Ipswich and Dusi and wherever you are, and this is a remote Eastern Cape NGO, and you attend 3 or 4 meetings here, and you discover then that there's a whole lot of irregularities. You have no idea it's been done. You have no complicity at all. In fact, you used your time, you never got paid for board meetings, you gave money towards it, but ultimately you're accountable. You have to resign. You did resign, but in your case, you know, the way you're presenting it, it's just, I think what members are saying, and the point I want to emphasize, if things were as good as you make them out to be, that people abide by the ethical code of conduct, somebody asked, if things were fine except for this external partner you got, and ultimately you chose the partner with your board, you know, so you're accountable too in that sense. If things were as good as you're making them out to be, how come we now have this biggest ever corporate scandal in this country? Right, really.
Honourable Chairperson, the first question that you referred to in terms of saying nothing or accept guilt and in terms of specific answers, I can only say that I'm trying my best this morning to answer the questions to the best of my ability and to the knowledge that I have. I'm not answering questions with something in mind of whether it will incriminate me or not. In terms of the biggest corporate scandal, the biggest corporate failure in South Africa, yes. The word scandal is now the writers of sensation, and of course it is saddened about the people that have lost money, and people, thankfully up to now, and certainly in South Africa, as I read it, there will be no job losses, that has been mitigated. But obviously, the fall in the share price and the value of lenders' money happened because of the uncertainty of the company without financial statements out there. And the reason why there was not financial statements out there was what I was trying to give the background to this morning and the process how that happened. Honourable Chairperson, the term accountability is that, of course, I feel totally responsible for what happened at Steinhoff, but for the reasons that I've mentioned why it happened. I chose the wrong partner. We went into territories when we shouldn't have gone into territories. But the discussion up to now and the allegations were fostered around accounting issues. And therefore, I participated and gave my full cooperation for 2 years in terms of those issues, and therefore I took the view I took in December, and I said I would take it like a man for the mistakes I made, and I've lost my whole career that I spent with Steinhoff.
All right. Not same order. We'll start with Comrade Kuno, Comrade Shwambu, Comrade Modise, McPherson. Yeah, and then we'll come this way. Just come this way. Can we have 2.5 questions? It's 12 o'clock now. I really don't know, comrades, but I'm just thinking, look, there are 2 things that we have sought to understand. One, it is the sequence of events, what happened, and what were the causes of where we are. And so far, having met the various key players singularly, we have received a variety of explanations on what happened. So we may need to think, and I'm sure you would agree,
if we were to have some of the gentlemen that you were working closely with, we have given versions that are conflictual to what you have given. I'm sure we could be able to try and narrow the understanding of the sequence of events. I think you have given the most detailed sequence of events. Whether that is right or not, I'm not there yet. But maybe we may need to think in that direction, because whatever we're discussing with him alone does not change what maybe Mr. Lekrange said to us last week, or what Vise said in the first meeting, and does not assist us as Parliament to have that sense of how things might have happened. So I'm just saying, as we give you the opportunity, let us maybe in the meantime be thinking around the need to have maybe another engagement where, because if we had started there with everybody in one room, we could have sealed it there and then and have this picture and then say, then what? As for other processes about who is right, who is guilty, who is that, that's not for us. That's another platform for other people to engage in. I'm just saying, let's think around that.
There is something else we need to get some clarity on. We're going to finish at 13:00. Now, we have 12 people's hands up, and you've got to give Mr. Yuster a chance to reply. So, I'm suggesting maybe we allow another 15 minutes or so beyond 13:00, and then we look at where we take the process forward. We also have to, once again, appreciate that this is a parallel process. In other words, there are regulators doing work, the hawks are doing work, they're going to report back to us within 14 days. There's a meeting pending of chairs with the hawks next week. I have already spoken to Mr. Buchmann. Becky Keller comes back tomorrow from China. We're going to pursue that. So this is not the be-all and end-all of the range of inquiries taking place. Some people are full-time working on this with the auditing, forensic, and technical capacity. It's the first thing to stress. Secondly, we still have some months ahead before the elections, and we've agreed there'll be a quarterly meeting. Thirdly, we have to know where we are going with these questions more precisely, and I agree with what the co-chair is saying. So I'm saying, Comrade Chair, can we get some guidance from the other? Well, Comrade Joe's just come in. The Public Service and Administration Committee, sorry, we should have said so, is here now. So I think we need some, Comrade Tema, some, maybe you can help here too, some guidance on how are we going to manage the time ahead and how long will we sit for? And then decide how much time each person gets and how much time Mr. Eustace is given to reply. There may be some questions like happens in this situation where we write the question, send it, well, Zakil is not here, we can sort that out, the other content advisory, and send it to Mr. Eustace within 48 hours, and he can reply within 7 days. Tema, just provide some guidance there.
I think, Comrade, very concretely, I want to suggest that beyond whatever follow-ups we're going to have, because like I said at the beginning, our interest is understanding what happened. And the piecemeal engagements that we've had are not giving us a conclusive sense. Well, maybe we may not necessarily have that. And that maybe if we were to have everybody who was involved at the same venue at the same time, then maybe we could discuss and out of that come up with something that is more concrete than the disparate perspectives that we have received so far. So I'm saying if we can work on the administrative part, if we agree, that is what we need to do, because meeting Vise again alone or meeting Mr. Poison or whoever will not assist us. I think that is what I would want to put on the table. But we want to give comrades the opportunity if they have follow-up questions, as I've already indicated, we should ask. But that would be my suggestion that we could be working on. I've said 2.5 questions. If we can help it. Comrade Kuno, Shivambu, Mudise, McPherson, and then... All right. My sincerest apologies. My sincerest apologies. Let's start with you, Comrade Kuno. Comrade Kuno, and then Shivambu, Comrade Tobias, and then McPherson, and then we'll come to sweep. You are going to sweep. You will be the sweeper. Yeah. Yes, Comrade Kuno. The mic is not on. No.
Is it on now? Okay, thank you very much, Shepherdson. I'm sort of being late. My goddaughter got sick, so I had to go to the hospital because their grandmother is not there. She's abroad. But Shepherdson, I agree with you fully on what you are saying, because we've been having this back and forth meetings. I think it's forever. And if we really want to, if we are taking ourselves seriously and our job seriously, and we want to get into the bottom of this case, I think we should have everybody in one room, even if you can devote one weekend. I mean, we're going on process very soon. We can devote one weekend for that, and we can take the whole day. We always do that in Scopa, and I've seen Finance Committee doing the same thing as well. So I don't think it can be a problem at all, and I think that's the only way we can get it into the bottom of it. But my first question, just to, you know, calm down my nerves, when I listen to Mr. Joste and what I've listened before from all his colleagues, it's really frustrating. You know, when you come in and being more defensive and you don't want to deal with the problem and the trouble that you are in, you find yourself saying what you're not supposed to be saying, not knowing that you are actually hanging yourself in a rope, which is what has happened. But my first question would be to Justin. In your own, I mean, you've been a CEO for Steinhoff for 29 years, and then yet you don't take internal auditors seriously. You do not take their advices seriously, and you were the CEO. You were the accounting officer. That's how you call yourself. That's how you item you as members of parliament, and that's what the PFMA is saying. And I don't think it applies only to government departments, but to everyone out there. What I want to ask you, how do you understand the work of internal auditors, and how are you related to that work? In other words, the advices that they give you, did you take them very seriously? I mean, as you are answering questions, you said there were no financial statements. I mean, even a spaza shop or a small stock firm that has started in Makumala's corner, they have financial statements, and you are not taking that seriously. And you are supposed to believe here that for 29 years you were the CEO of Steinhoff and this company was doing so well. You've lost 3 billion rand. But I'm talking about the real issues that you should start with. You can't keep on saying we had the wrong partners. Chairperson, that's the last one. You can't keep on saying we had the wrong partners. You do diligence. And I think I'm not a business person, but I know for sure that if you have any partner that you want to bring on board, except for that saying that, you know, there's too many slices of cake to share, let us come and meet.
Right.
That's why you
okay.
didn't do your due diligence.
Okay.
I just want to him to answer on that, Chairperson.
All right,
thanks.
Sure. Let's take Comrade Swambu.
No, Chair, I think that we might need to give a clearer context of this strategic partner whom Makar Juste is blaming for all the problems that got to confront Steinhoff. Of concern is that this strategic partner, they've had a partnership from 2007. What was the form of the partnership? Was it an acquisition of a new company which was part of Steinhoff? Was it an external service provider or supplier of whatever? This is cipher. I don't know, like, what is that? So you must remind me to explain what was the nature of the relationship there. And from 2007 to 2017, I think that is the issue which Comrade Nati had raised, to say that when did you detect that there's a problem with that strategic partner that could lead to the erosion of the entire 200 billion worth of company? And that is one issue. And do you think that those systemic issues which defined the strategic partner, have they been resolved currently, okay, or they are still part of that cipher which you are currently mentioning as all the sole cause of the crisis that God defines there.
Okay,
sure.
All right, sure. Can we have a response to those two sets of questions? Very focused.
Honourable Chairperson, the first question, I cannot recall that I, during my presentation, referred to internal auditors at all, but the group had internal auditors in every component division around the world. Those internal auditors report to the local management, which is in charge of that company, and their reports is delivered to them on a quarterly basis. Those internal reports is then combined quarterly into the reports that is reviewed by the audit committee of the group of each one of the clusters, as I've explained, and then it's elevated, if significant at all, to the Steinhoff International level. So Steinhoff had a very sophisticated process of internal audit throughout the group. And I didn't refer to anything of that during my presentation at all. The external auditor's role and the fact that there were not financial statements published in December, I don't think must be compared to a spaza shop not having or having financial statements. As I've tried to explain in my presentation, was that the auditors were not prepared to sign off on the financial statements. So the financial statements was there. They were not prepared to sign off because they wanted to have this new investigation. And just on the last point, in terms of the Steinhoff NV structure and my role as CEO, I am not the accounting officer of the group. In terms of the strategic partner, Honourable Member, Dr. Andreas Seifert was the owner of a large mass discount retail chain called Meubelix and Domain that operated in Germany and Austria throughout that territory and also in some smaller Eastern European countries. We, as Steinhoff, had an investment in a German retail group called POCO. And when that discussion in 2006 took place to form the strategic partnership, we signed a memorandum of understanding in January of 2007. And then in 2007, we merged all our POCO shops and his Domain and Meubelix stores into a combined company that we called POCO Domain Holdings, and that became a 50-50 joint venture at that stage in 2007. The partnership then expanded because the MOU contained conditions that the two of us, Seifert and Steinhoff, were not allowed to compete anywhere within the European Union and some defined Eastern European countries with each other. So if we wanted to do something in another country, we had to share that. And that's, as I've mentioned earlier, on the high of the relationship in 2011, we bought Conferama at that stage together, and he was a participant in that acquisition. He couldn't come to light with his money to pay his 50% of the acquisition price, which I only found out a couple of days before we had to pay. And then we facilitated for him to participate with a convertible loan note substantially less than the 50%. But at that stage, I saw that as cash flow issue on his side, not an integrity issue. So we continued to work together, and he was the instigator that wanted us to buy Kickerliner in Austria because that was his biggest competitor in that territory. And then we bought that as well, and the real red lights came up when that acquisition was completed. There was again a problem with him to participate with money. And therefore, in 2014, when we insisted to put this joint venture in place, because my view at that stage to him was, how long are we going to carry on until you either pay your 50%
or we calculate what each one have put in and calculate what percentage you are entitled to. And that's that discussion that started and led to the fallout in November 14, and then in January 15, on legal advice, I ended that partnership with him. And then all the court cases started, and then we had the case in Vienna, which is still open today, so that dispute about the shortfall for the Conferama acquisition, that court case is still open. I've just seen yesterday that Steinhoff has settled some things with him in terms of Germany, and then we had the dispute in Holland, which was an accounting dispute, and that was ruled on, and the company, in terms of the ruling, decided not to appeal that ruling, which is a ruling I don't agree with. I hope that gives you more background.
All right. But how did he become part of the problems that you explain has happened now? Like, I still don't understand how is he responsible for the crisis and the collapse of Steinhoff, because you're still blaming them.
All right. That's fine. I think you're right. That's part of the question. How
As I tried to explain, when that dispute happened and we cancelled the agreements in 15, Seifert was the guy that went with all our information of the last 8 years that we did together, the brand companies we owned together, the buying groups we had together, everything that we had. And he provided that information to the German tax authorities, which led to the investigation, which in turn led to this whole accounting probe.
All right. That's fine. Mr. Yuster, I want to go back to the SMS that you sent to your colleagues, because I think it offers an insight into your state of mind at the time after the company that you have worked at for 29 years collapses. And you use very descriptive language by using the words consequences and behavior. And if it is reflective rather on your choice of your strategic partners, I would have thought more or better descriptive words like choices would have been used. And I'm still not convinced that it was more an admission of how bad things had unraveled and how quickly that had taken place. So I just want to further understand what other areas of your behavior contributed to the collapse of Steinhoff. And then I just need some clarity on the 3 billion rand that you had said, what the shares of, what the worth of your shares were in Steinhoff. Was that 3 billion rand the day before the share price collapsed? Is that what the total 68 million shares were worth? If that is the case, what was those 68 million shares worth after the collapse of the share price? Do you still have those shares today, and what are they worth today?
Okay. All right, thanks.
Chair, I might be now speaking in parables, because I understand we are very extraterrestrial, because we're dealing with issues of a global network. Mr. Yuster, and I want you to pay attention to the type of comments I'm going to make. When I asked you your mantra, either your personal mantra or the Steinhoff mantra, you explained it very clear that you wanted to build a global network, and you also wanted to be a global player. Now I understand very carefully as to how the transactions in terms of acquisition has led to certain positions that you personally as the CEO or the company might have taken in the pursuance of the mission of becoming a global player, and how possibly Cypress might have used Steinhoff to do acquisition in a field where they did not want direct engagement. I want you to listen to me carefully on that specific one. And I repeat it, Chair, it's very important, because it's how I analyze it. How Cypress might have used Steinhoff for acquisition, that they would have not wanted to have a direct transaction, an event that there's a shortfall. And I'm saying this specifically because I looked at your shortfalls in terms of the type of acquisitions you made in America, specifically, that led to losses. Now, and I'm not saying you must incriminate yourself in the follow-up question I'm going to ask, but it's for you to consider, because I'm asking this in good faith, Chair, that we need at least to have an answer as to who decides on acquisition. Who decides on acquisitions for us to be able to establish effect as to when the financial position of the company is stated for acquisition-related purposes becomes the responsible party to take responsibility as and when a wrong perception has been created about the party, and who pursues a specific risk appetite. Is it the board that decides on the level of acquisition? Is it the CEO who says we get into this market?
Right.
I want us to leave it at that, because at Chair, this will lead to events that we later when we relate to this matter. But this one is going to open us up for us to be able to plan as to at what point are we going to locate any company that might have directly dealt with the share drop and the shortings, and shortings in economic terms, as it's related somewhere by financial experts who looked at how companies will drive market sentiment.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right, thanks. And what? You'll take the three.
No, Chair. The pity that time is against us. I just want to maybe say, Chair, one mistake you must not make is to call these accounting irregularities or all these other fancy terms which sanitize the tragedy and crisis before us. This is pure corruption, because we treat the public sector with that kind of outlook. So I'm just saying, Uti, can't be different strokes for different folks. Just maybe one broad question. Mr. Yuster, hindsight being the best sight, and you having had now 10 months or so sabbatical, you know, outside kind of, and as a shareholder, let me maybe take you out of the context of being CEO, as a shareholder, and considering the losses that you incurred, in your assessment, looking at this entire collapse brought about by corrupt activities, where would you put the blame? Or to ask it in a different way, to say, if you were to point in the direction of where any investigation were to start, in which direction would you point those investigating? Because I'm sure you've got a keen interest, because you've suffered losses. Then, finally, Chair, I must say I take a strong exception to the term knowledge you used to say, this was not about losing money. Well, this is about losing money, because these are people's sustainable livelihoods that we're speaking about. I'm still, Chair, not convinced that the narrative which seeks to explain the reasons why Mr. Yuster left are genuine and honest. And I'll just leave it at that.
All right. No, thanks. Any response to those three inputs?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The first question was again back at the SMS that I sent my colleagues on the 5th of December, when I was informed that the board have decided to move on their own and my employment was ended. obviously that was not something that happened quickly. That was a period that happened, as I've mentioned before, that I've been busy for more than 2.5 years dealing with this matter, and the frustration from my side and the decision was not take easy of a way out. It was the end of the road that I was not going to start a new investigation, and I've made the point now a few times, I knew what the consequences of a new investigation was going to be to the value of the shares. And the behavior that I talk about and the reference to my colleagues, they knew exactly what the mistakes were at that time that I was referring to. We dealt with the Seifert fight as a executive team in the last 9 months of the company on a daily basis. So it was not that any one of them wouldn't have known what I was talking about. Your question about the shares, the Honorable Chair asked me to do a quick calculation in my head the day before. That's the sum I did. And in terms of what happened after that, it's public knowledge that that company, Mayfair, had to make a settlement with its bankers where it's used these shares as collateral for financial loans, and all those shares have been sold in the 2 weeks or whatever, I'm not sure, after December. So that investment company has no more Stein of shares left. In terms of the strategic questions, the Steinhoff had an investment committee and a executive management forum, and this forum met every month. We had a video conference, and in this forum was present the chairman of the group, Dr. Wiese, his son Jakob, Bruno Steinhoff, the founder of the group, Peter Pullman, which was our partner in the POCO company, and then the CEO of every one of those clusters that I shared with the committee this morning that made up each one of the executive divisions of the group, and then the whole Stellenbosch executive team. And this monthly meeting, an investment committee, would, if there was any proposal by any CEO in the world to do an acquisition in his territory, or one of the head office people with a suggestion, the group services team at Steinhoff would have written a written document with the subject matter, the financials attached, an analysis of it, a due diligence report of it, outside advisors' opinion about it, how to be funded, does it contravene the group's covenants with its lenders, and then a 3-year forecast of what that company or proposed acquisition should deliver. That was then discussed at this meeting and either approved or disapproved. And above a certain amount, each one of them had to then be referred to the board for full approval. And that was the process followed by the company. The question...
Can I ask a follow-up just more? Who was the chairperson of the board at the time?
Dr. Wiese. The question about Seifert using Steinhoff, I testified in Vienna in the court fight with Seifert that I was certainly of the opinion that they never had the intention to pay for any of the acquisitions which they proposed to us, as it turned out. And that was part of the fight and the litigation. And that was ongoing at the time when I left. But I can say that the interim remarks by the judge in Vienna confirmed that feeling that we had at that stage in time. The Honorable Member's specific reference to America, I didn't fully follow that, but the American acquisition had nothing to do with Seifert, if that was the question. And the American investment was a proposal from Ben Legrandsie,
that was proposed by him to the investment committee and to the board of Steinhoff. But I approved and agreed with that investment.
Can I explain? Because I was mentioning it as part of a bad investment decision.
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
I was referring to it as one of the bad investment decisions that were taken by...
In retrospect,
yes.
The American decision was a bad decision, yes.
All right. No, that's fine. Saying what's input after... Yes. No, that's fine.
In terms of the period that I am outside of Steinhoff, I'm not blaming anybody for the what happened at Steinhoff. I really tried my best to share with this honorable committee's all the facts that I have and what led to it, the direction of which any investigation must take. I personally believe that everything has been investigated already for 2 years by professional firms, by the German authorities for nearly 4 years, and obviously the process that is on the go involves all the regulators, as I've mentioned. I've already participated at the FSB as they were known then, and offered our assistance, and we will have to see what the outcome is. And I'd like to mention to the honourable member, my reference to losing money wasn't talking about other people. I said losing money played no role in my decision to give up my role at Steinhoff after 29 years when they didn't want to follow my advice, because I had enough at that day after 2.5 years of dealing with that, and I knew what the consequences were going to be.
All right. Comrade Tim. And, sure.
Chair, thank you. Chair, comments have been made as to the level or not of Mr. Eustace's contrition. as a forensic investigator, I'm not really worried about contrition, how people feel. I'm more interested in the facts. So, and I suppose I should remind Mr. Eustace that he's under oath. Mr. Eustace, you answered earlier about, when I spoke to you about capital outflows, about the fact that the company was constrained to repatriate funds. I didn't get the opportunity to clarify my question. So here's the clarification. How much money have you personally exported out of the country in your personal name with the assistance of outside entities or persons, for instance, like Malcolm King and George Evans? Question number one. Question number two is, once again, a clarification. You stated that you had never taken any short positions on Steinhoff stock. So may I ask, what entities or persons that you have an interest in, business entities or persons that you have a business interest in whatever manner whatsoever, have taken short positions on Steinhoff stock, let's say in the last 2 years? Or, in fact, let's not define it. In other words, anything outside of your person, for instance, your family trust or businesses you may have an interest in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, have taken short positions. Thank you.
Mr. Yester, your much has been said about your answers, and obfuscation has been a thought of mine. But you know, the agreement which became a court order was that you would appear here to identify institutional flaws, challenges, etc., etc., which might have caused or given rise to the collapse of the value of the share. And so what I'm hearing from you this morning is that really the only thing that caused the collapse of the shares was the opening of a new investigation and not following the route that you had suggested of tabling a set of interim or unaudited financial statements. is that really what your position remains now, in hindsight, looking back? I'm not sure what you actually, I mean, why did you enter into this agreement about institutional flaws and challenges if your view was that the only reason for the collapse in the share prices was an announcement of a new investigation caused the decline in share prices? Another example is some obfuscation, Mr. Yuster. Is it not true, and you've mentioned Mayfair a few minutes ago, that there's a 1 billion rand loss in Steinhoff shares, which actually is being carried by people who had given Mayfair loans, that it's not a personal loss to you? Because that's the impression you gave, is that 3 billion rand was a personal loss. But it seems, and you can confirm, having already stated that Mayfair has now had to sell those shares to try and meet its obligations to lenders, that indeed not that entire loss of 3 billion or whatever the actual loss was, the estimated 3 billion actually was a personal loss.
Okay.
And that is in terms of personal wealth, the fact that you have an impressive legal team with you indicates that your personal wealth hasn't suffered to any great degree as compared with many of the investors. Thank you.
Right, give me the response.
Honourable Chairperson, the question about whether I have ever taken any money out of South Africa, the answer is no. I have only been remunerated by Steinhoff as is allowed for the international work that I've done, and that money I have left overseas from time, but paid tax on it in South Africa and could have left it overseas as the regulations stipulate. I've never taken money from South Africa out of the company, out of the country. In terms of any short positions, I have never been part of any short positions in Steinhoff or have any interest in any companies that has. The flaws and challenges and the new investigation, I would like to add, I mean, the new investigation led to the event of uncertainty and the inability to announce the results, and that led to the immediate fall of the price of the Steinhoff share, which is why the topic of today about why did the share price fall is why I used that in my introduction.
What happened? Sorry, Mr. Chairman, I asked about the institute identifying institutional flaws and challenges in the relevant financial regulatory framework. That's what supposedly you had come here for.
Yes. What I'm saying, my version that I've shared with the committees of how it happened in terms of what happened that day, no regulatory flaw or challenge could prevent it. In terms of your question about Mayfair, maybe I must just state it again. I mentioned clearly that Mayfair is an investment company that belongs to a family trust of which I am a beneficiary. The question by the honourable member was to say, did I have exposure to any financial losses in Steinhoff? And I said what that company's exposure was at that time. The company was funded by loans, and those loans are in the process of being repaid. So if a company makes a loss, sell its asset and pay its loans, then the company has a financial loss. But I think I'm not here to discuss Mayfair's, you know, matters, because I don't think that there's relevance to the detail of how their funding works. It's a public document.
All right.
Chairman, Mr. Yuster should understand that this is not his board.
We can't hear.
Okay.
Can't hear.
This is not a board meeting, and he's not in charge here. And
okay.
Yeah.
All right. No, that's fine.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got three questions and then a brief follow-up question. If I understand it, Mr. Yuster, your version is that essentially rogue auditors who, on your version, had lost their independence, refused to sign off on the financial statements on the basis of alleged irregularities, which you believe have no basis in fact, and that you were not aware of any accounting irregularities at Steinhoff International Holdings NV. The question then arises, how do you explain the massive billion rand restatement of the financial statements recently, which included reference to inflated profits, related party transactions, the incorrect application of financial statements, and the billion, if I recall correctly, write down at Hemisphere Property. How do you explain that? Secondly, we heard from Ben LaGrange, and he said that, in his view, all this, in fact, started a long time ago. So let me take you back then a decade to a report produced by an analyst called Sean Holmes, who at the time, I believe, worked for J.P. Morgan, and who produced a piece of research on Steinhoff International Holdings. And in that report, there's a section referred to as What Lies Beneath. And just to give you some flavor very briefly, Chair, because it's a long and very detailed report. I quote from the report. He says, "We are concerned that financial disclosure in many instances is extremely vague, which restricts investors' attempts to make informed decisions. We find it very difficult to get an understanding of the organic financial performance of the company, as ongoing acquisitions distort comparisons and poor financial disclosure," I emphasize, poor financial disclosure, "further clouds the issue." Now, does that not suggest that, in fact, the evidence of Mr. Ben LaGrange was correct? What we're dealing with here is, in fact, a pattern which began at least a decade ago. And given this report, would you tell us, Mr. Easton, how did you deal with Sean Holmes? Is it true that, in fact, you, and I think it was Len Konar, who was the chairman at the time, bullied analysts who reached conclusions that you found unfavorable and threatened J.P. Morgan with legal action? That's how, in fact, you dealt with your detractors. You were a bully, and you went after them. Is that correct, or is it incorrect? Then finally, what knowledge, or do you have any knowledge of a so-called off-balance sheet entity called Campion Capital? And do you have any knowledge of a company called Clue Investments? And what is your business relationship and, or indeed, personal relationships with a gentleman called George Allen Evans? And then finally, Chair, just a follow-up. The second question which I asked, which Mr. Yuster did not respond to, related to the code of conduct of Steinhoff. Now, in his reply, Mr. Yuster said that he was not aware of any employee who did not comply with Steinhoff's code of conduct. My question to him was whether he complied
with Steinhoff's code of conduct, given that that code of conduct states that no employee may engage in any act involving fraud, corruption, money laundering, dishonesty, and deception. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. I think we have managed time well. It was 1 o'clock. Can we have your response, sir?
Honorable Chair, the reference to the previous round of questions in terms of the code of conduct of the employees, I refer to myself as well, yes. In terms of, I would just like to say that I never referred to the auditors as rogue auditors in any discussion I had. The restatement of financial statements that happened in the half-year results of Steinhoff, I've certainly had a look at that. I have no information other than what is written on those documents. What I can say is that with my knowledge of the past and what I look at there, if you buy an asset for 10 and you put it in your books for 10, at the end of the day, you must do a fair value at the end of the year to see if it needs an impairment. And that's a process that every division of the group has to do at that level. It then goes to the auditors, and it then gets tested at group level. I cannot comment on the write-offs of values today, which I was not aware of when I was on the 4th of December still there. So I cannot comment. And once the information is published, on what basis were those assets written off, then obviously I would be in a better position to reply. The issue about a J.P. Morgan research report, that is an extremely long time ago when Steinhoff was still a virtually a South African-based company and a manufacturer and a sourcer. I recall, I can't recall any word in the report because it's a very long time ago, I recall that it was a negative report on the company. We did meet with this analyst to understand what his queries was, and then through the facilitation of Dr. Konar, who at that stage was the chairman of Steinhoff International here in South Africa, we had a meeting with his boss at JP Morgan to discuss with them our disagreement in some of the comments that he made, and I'm not aware of where I ever bullied Sean Holmes in my life, so I can't comment on that. In terms of Campion Capital is a private equity group in Switzerland. I know the company, and the company has done business with Steinhoff. I have no financial interest in this company. It was a company we do business with. Clue Investment, similarly, was a subsidiary of a foreign Swiss company in the early days of Steinhoff that assisted Steinhoff when our local guys wanted to invest in the timber industry. The board at that stage didn't want to invest in long-term assets and land. So Clue Investments, a foreign investor, in those days you got allowances for forest investors, were the partner. Once they sold it and that was finished, Clue Investments was acquired by Mayfair as a dormant company after all the deals was done. George Allen Evans that you referred to is the senior partner of Campion Capital.
All right. Comrades, two things.
Chair, just my question was a bit more detailed. I mean, did you have a personal business relationship?
Okay.
Do you ever meet him, interact with him?
Of course. I know him well. Done business for years, but it's not a... It's a. I have no financial interest in him or his affairs. We dealt as counterparties to each other.
All right. Comrades, we almost at the tail end. Just two things from me. As I indicated at the beginning, we're here for a conversation, an
I'm happy that we didn't have a lot of legal intervention. We spoke on almost everything. But, comrades, for me, our interest was not just to have Mr. Yuste and everybody else just appearing before us. We had an objective to achieve, which was to understand what transpired, what happened. And so far we have three versions. The first one from Dr. Vise was that this was like a thunder out of the blue. And Mr. Lekrange last week said there were three baskets of issues that basically led to the collapse. And in part, that Mr. Yuste did not fully share information with him. Now, Mr. Yuste today says, well, the collapse of the share price was as a result of purely uncertainty, because the annual financial statements were unaudited and could not be released in time. That uncertainty is what has led to the collapse. And I'm saying that as Parliament, if we have these three versions, we therefore can't say, well, we have heard you, it's okay, let it pass. It is my strong view that for us to be able to understand, as we have set out to do, it will be important, and I'm sure it would assist everyone of them if we were to be able to sit down, all of us and all of them, and say, can you assist us to reconcile these positions? Because you all work for the same company, you're all in leadership position, but your version of what transpired is so divergent that one would assume you're working for different companies. So unless and until we're able to find a way of reconciling those contradictory perspectives, the entire exercise will not have assisted us to understand anything. I think for me, that is what is important. And secondly, I think Mr. Yuste's explanation, I think in response to Comrade Tobias, I can't remember, yeah, about the two joint acquisitions they did with Dr. Seifert. I think it's an important and interesting area to look into. But also Comrade Tobias' question around acquisitions and risk appetite. I think for me those are the two grey areas that once we have resolved what has transpired, we may say let us look into those things. And I don't think that it ventures into anybody's territory. It's still within the territory of Parliament to understand. Just like we do with departments. In Scopa, we call them and say, here's an irregular expenditure, tell us which company, when, how much, which official was responsible, what measures have you taken. That does not take away the responsibility of the Auditor General or the police if there's any criminality, but it merely assists us to have information, to have understanding of what has transpired. And I must say, without putting any judgment on Mr. Yuste, I think more than, and maybe because of your position, but more than any other person, you have given us much more detailed information on sequence of events, which for me is a good basis to then deal with every other divergent perspective, because we have dates, we have people, we have facts on those particular dates. Whether they are correct or not, that's another issue. But I think it does assist us to have a picture of a sequence of events, but whether those events in that sequence are actually the cause, that's the question. So, comrades, chair, for me, that is where I think we would need to leave it at. Thanks.
One is that Mr. Yuste, our aim here, nor is it our legal mandate, is not to find guilt or innocence of any person involved in Steinhoff, including you. We don't have that power. For me, at least, the main issue that arises after your input here today and following the three previous briefings we've had on Steinhoff is the need for the regulators to do far more decisively, and far more swiftly. The regulators are all here. The hawks presumably are here too. We want you to move. Now, we recognize the complex and global nature of what's happened in Steinhoff. We're acutely aware that you have to look at hundreds of thousands of documents before you get to the bottom of who did what exactly, when, and how. But surely there's enough already available to you 10 months after this crisis broke out. And I'm addressing the regulators here, and the hawks, and the NPA, for you to act against those who have done wrong, whoever they are. I think that's the main point. Our job is to hold the regulators to account, and the hawks to account, and the NPA to account to do their jobs. Our second aim, to repeat, is we're not going to be able, as we've repeatedly said, to look at hundreds and thousands of documents in 32 jurisdictions, to arrive at exactly who did what to whom. No parliament in the world can do it. No parliament indeed, neither the Germans nor the Dutch are doing anything of this nature. But what we can do, to repeat what the co-chair is saying, is look as far as possible on the broad trends of what happened, be as precise as we can possibly be in understanding what happened, to influence our oversight responsibilities over the regulators and the hawks and the NPA. And also to pass regulations and laws and to put the executive under pressure to contribute towards ensuring that these things are reduced, these outrages are reduced, that the prospects of, are reduced substantially. That's our aim. And this is not the work we'll finish, colleagues, comrades, before April, May next year when the elections occur. So in our exit report, we'll have to say this is how far we've come. I also want to stress, I think this is the ending of the first phase of the work we've done. It's the ending of the first phase. Now we have to, the chairs meet together and discuss where we take things and how, and we will come back to the four committees concerned on a process around that. And what we're simply saying is, Parliament can do so much, but really, ultimately it's the regulators and the hawks and the NPA that must simply do their jobs. Thank you. You want to say anything?
No.
So we're done. Thank you very much.